May it please the Court. Joe Vanover for Eric Zond on the Van Amburgh case. The issue is, will this court continue to maintain established procedures by which defendants can challenge judgments and convictions? The issues are finality of judgments and the rule of law. There is a set procedure by which defendants can challenge their convictions, depending on where they are in the criminal justice system. For a defendant that has pled guilty and has a suspended imposition of sentence, they can challenge that guilty plea under Rule 2907D, the first clause of 2907D, which allows a court in certain circumstances to set aside the guilty plea. For a defendant that has received a suspended execution of sentence, which is the defendant in both my cases, for a suspended execution of sentence, a defendant can ask for relief under the second clause of Rule 2907D. Once a defendant has had the sentence executed and they've gone to the Department of Corrections, they can challenge the conviction under either Rule 24035 for guilty pleas or 2915 for trials. Once that time period has passed for filing a 24035 or 2915 motion, then they're pushed into habeas cases. If they want to challenge the judgment after the 180 days has passed, then they have to push it through habeas. In this particular case, the defendant had a suspended execution of sentence. He was already convicted. So the first clause of 2907D was not available. But the second clause of 2907D was potential. They could have filed under that claim, but the defendant did not. And I think the choice of not seeking relief under 2907D was a conscious decision, a strategic decision. The defendant asked for relief under 2912, which the trial court went along with, was just a straight change in the judgment. A judgment from a felony switched directly to a misdemeanor. Now, if the defendant would have asked for relief under 2907D, the second clause, that provides that the judgment of conviction is set aside, the guilty plea is set aside. That would have put the defendant back to the position of he's been accused, but he has not pled guilty, he's not been found guilty, and that would have given the prosecutor the opportunity to ask to amend the charges.
What about the statute of limitations? Misdemeanors must be brought within 1 year of the offense. How does that affect the Basel cases across the state?
If the charge had been amended from one to the other, then I think the statute of limitations is not an issue because it runs off of the original charging date when he was first charged as felony stealing. And if it's amended from stealing to receiving stolen property, then it's told.
It's not a certain period of time after the offense?
It's from the time of the offense to the time of the charge.
And you're saying you can amend the charge and it doesn't affect the running of the statute?
Amending the charge does not affect the running of the statute.
Even if it's a totally different charge?
If the amendment is granted from one statute to another, the statute of limitations does not apply.
But if, again, Basel is being applied retroactively, then the reality is that the case must have been brought, charged, before within that 1 year period. And if it wasn't, would the statute of limitations have run?
And that's an interesting point, and I think that is being raised in some cases. I'm not sure that it was raised in this particular one. There are cases where the offense happens, more than a year goes by, but less than 3 years go by, is charged as a felony stealing, and then it's a question of, is there a statute of limitations issue? But I don't believe that is an issue in this particular case.
Well, if we're under 2907 and the defendant is allowed to withdraw its guilty plea, the state could dismiss the charge and file it as receiving up to 3 years.
Then there was probably a statute of limitations problem, because dismissing the stealing basically ends that case. If the state would file a new stealing case, then there's law that the time that it was pending, the first stealing, was told statute. But if the state would dismiss the stealing and charge a new case of receiving, that would be a statute of limitations problem. Right. The state could not do that.
Right. Well, it depends whether it was within the 3 year period.
Right. And we're outside of the 3 year period.
Right. You are in your case, right?
Right. The issue of retroactivity, I think, is a good one. It's an important one that's been discussed. I think we probably end up with the same result if it's retroactive or not. The retroactivity, as I understand it, is if the court says this is new law, then it's retroactive only as to cases that are still on direct appeal, that haven't completed direct review, so that would be appeal.
Which is not considered retroactive at all, because they're not final. They're still on appeal.
They're right. So basically, if this court says it's a new law, it's not. It's only retroactive as to cases still on direct appeal or direct review. Mm-hmm. Right. It doesn't apply to vast numbers of cases where the defendant has pled guilty or been found guilty or whatever is, and the time for appeals passed and the time for 2403-5 and 2915 is passed. It doesn't apply to all those. If this court, however, says this is not new law, we are just clarifying, we are stating what everyone could have seen, what was clear and ambiguous, has been pointed out, then all of the defendants up to this point could have raised the issue that was raised in Bazell. And if this is not a change in law, they could have raised it, and they didn't raise it, then they've waived it. I think that if the court says this is not a change in law, retroactivity really is an issue, we can still reach the same position of where it doesn't apply to the vast numbers of people that have completed their sentences.
Well, when could somebody who had not been remanded to corrections, when could they have raised it? What was the failure that caused a waiver for that group?
The failure that caused the waiver, anyone that doesn't raise an issue waives it.
Right, but how were you to waive it if you had pled guilty, you got an SES, and you were still serving your probation, what was your avenue to raise the Bazell claim?
Well, if you pled guilty and received an SES, then you can appeal directly.
Are you claiming they waived it in this case since they haven't yet been remanded to the Department of Corrections, or are you just claiming they raised the wrong rule here?
I'm claiming they raised the wrong rule.
You're not saying they couldn't raise in 2907. You're saying they should have done that and not in 2912.
Right. In this case, it's not complete. Direct review has not been completed because they haven't gone to Department of Corrections. The defendant hasn't, the clock hasn't started for 2915 or 24035.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Are there people who have not been remanded to corrections and therefore, following their guilty plea, have had no opportunity to file a PCR motion?
Okay. Certainly.
Have any of those people waived their Bazell claim by not bringing it under some other?
Yes, I think so. Anyone that, if you have not gone to the Department of Corrections, then they still have rights under 2907D. That applies, 2907D applies, the second clause applies to anyone that's been convicted but has not gone to Department of Corrections. Because once you go to Department of Corrections, then Rule 24035 and 2915 take over.
Whether or not, are you saying they had to bring it under 2907 or they waived it, or are they still explicitly under 24035 and 2915 can raise the illegality of a sentence?
I'm saying that they, while they're on probation,
yes,
they can raise a 2907.
And if they don't, does that constitute a waiver later on?
I believe so.
Even under 24035, where it says you can raise it, in that?
Well, they don't get rights under 24035 unless they've gone to Department.
Yes, right. So say your two clients here, say they hadn't filed anything, because they haven't yet been remanded, right, to
Correct.
The Department of Corrections. So say that you had not filed this motion that you filed, and they didn't file one under 2907D, but they did file it under, once they got remanded to the Department of Corrections, they did then file a 24035 and raise this issue. Are they permitted to do that?
Yes.
Okay. You're just saying if they never get their probation revoked,
right,
that they're not entitled to a remedy.
Well,
if they successfully served their probation and were never remanded,
right,
and never filed a motion under 29, they couldn't some later day say that wasn't a valid conviction.
That's what I'm saying.
Because they waived the right to direct appeal, which they could have filed timely to raise this claim, and they never filed one under 29 while they were on probation. 2907, and they never filed one under the 2915 or 24035. So in essence, they've waived all three ways to raise this claim.
Yes, and that's large numbers of defendants that I think are in that position, where they receive probation, they're off probation, and under Bazell, and my opposing counsel's theory of the case, they can come back and ask for these convictions to be undone. I mean, someone that has pled guilty, got probation, SES probation, completed probation, years go by, under my opposing counsel's point of view, that is not a final judgment. That can be raised in the sentencing court today. The consequence of ruling for the other side, I think, opens the door to what I think it was the Simmons court that said it was a chaos of review, unlimited in time, scope, and expense.
Can you address the 2912 versus 2907D issue? Because this was brought under 2912, manifest injustice, not under 2907. And in doing that, can you address, unlike with habeas, 2912 and 2907 would be filed in the same court. So should we just convert it if we think it's the wrong motion, or is that inappropriate?
Well, they asked for relief under 2912. For this court to just convert it, I think you're overstepping your bounds. I think it's the defendant's choice of which rule they want to file under.
I mean, if in the prior case the question came up, we should treat it like a habeas if that was more appropriate. So I'm saying I can't recall, honestly, if counsel asked us to treat it like a 2907 or not. But would you be opposed to that, or is that an appropriate thing? I want to get your position on that.
Sure. If this court grants my side relief and it makes the preliminary writ permanent, it will go back basically to the position in the sentencing court, undo what's been done. The defendant would then have an opportunity. The defendant is still on probation. The defendant would have an opportunity to file a motion under 2907D. And the defendant could make that decision to seek relief under that rule. At that point, the judge would have to take evidence, and make a decision, was there a manifest injustice?
But there'd be no reason for us to do that because there's still time to do that in the trial court.
Correct. If the court grants me relief, we go back to the sentencing court and the defendant's still on probation.
Okay, thank you.
Was there?
If the time for the running of a regular appeal has run, okay, and it's determined that that Bazell only applies to those on direct appeal, how would they get relief under 2907D?
If it's new law,
why isn't that judgment final as to everyone? And there's no Fiore problem.
I'm not quite sure I understand, but
if the Bazell case is determined to only provide relief for those who are on direct appeal,
right,
and the time for direct appeal has run, why would they be entitled to relief under 2907?
For anyone that's still on probation, they've not completed direct review. I think that.
Well, they
have not completed.
They waive the right to appeal. The direct review means appeal. Their only relief would be post-conviction.
Right. My understanding was cases that are final on direct review includes the appeal and 2915-24035 rights. That when the SES is given, at that point they have the right to an appeal, a direct appeal. But that, you know, has passed. That time has passed. So this particular defendant cannot file a direct appeal. But if his probation was revoked and he was sentenced to Department of Corrections, then
right, but if he wasn't revoked, we're back to that question.
If he wasn't
worried
revoked,
about the people who aren't revoked,
then he's on probation. And if he's never revoked, he completes probation and he has this on his record, and he cannot have it taken off unless he asks for relief under 2907D.
And I think the question is, could he ask under 2907? Does his ability to ask under 2907D depend on Bazell being retroactive?
No, I don't believe so. Okay. I think because he's still on probation. So if the court says that retroactivity is for people that are on direct appeal or post-conviction, the 2915-24-35, because he's within that time period of. Because it hasn't, that time period hasn't started,
right,
to run,
right.
2915-24-35. Thank you.
May it please the court. I don't think there's an issue of waiver here. Let me just start with that. First of all, the direct appeal for a guilty plea is limited to two things, subject matter, jurisdiction, and whether or not the charge actually charges an offense. The other thing is 24035 specifically contemplates a situation where you have a sentence imposed in excess of the maximum of law that you don't have to appeal it, because it specifically says that that's one of the claims that can be made in a 24035, and in the timing they say if no appeal is taken, then you have the X number of days. So clearly, if the rule provides that down the road, if you don't appeal, you can raise this issue on a 24035, I don't see how you can then later on say, but you've waived it, because the rule 24035 contemplates that that issue can, in fact, be raised later on and not raised on a direct appeal.
Well, they have an ability to raise it so that it doesn't matter whether Bazell was retroactive or not.
Right. First of all, I believe Bazell is retroactive, but I don't think retroactivity is an issue in this case particularly. First of all, the opposing counsel has never even raised that as an issue. Secondly, my client can still raise this if he ever gets sent to prison. So I don't think retroactivity is a problem.
What if he doesn't get to prison?
I'm sorry, what?
What if he doesn't get to prison? How does he raise it?
Well, the court, well, first of all, the 2912, which, of course, is what we're here about, then, in theory, the prosecutor said we can do a 2907.
The second clause of 2907 specifically says if you've been sentenced but not delivered to the Department of Corrections. So it's made for this factual situation,
right,
isn't it?
Certainly he could raise it under 2907. I think 2912 is more appropriate based on the case law. The case law specifically says, and out of this court, the Morris court and the other courts say, that when you have an illegal sentence, there is no final judgment.
And are those cases valid after the court found that jurisdictional competence is not a proper jurisdiction, or on the basis, as Judge Stiss said, if you trace those cases back to the first case, there was no legal basis for making that statement?
I think so, because it's not a matter of jurisdiction. We're saying that the court had jurisdiction, but it's just not a final judgment.
What would raise the misinterpretation of a statute to some error that's higher than constitutional error that would affect the finality of a judgment?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand.
Well, you're suggesting that the misreading of a statute would completely remove jurisdiction of the court to enter any sort of final judgment. That seems to me that you're saying that's even worse than constitutional violations, that at least at some point have to be brought up in a timely manner. You're saying that this is the type of error, misinterpretation of a statute, that just has no boundaries as it relates to time.
Well, I think the case law is clear that if it's an illegal sentence, which is a sentence that's either below the minimum, as of those other cases apply, or above the maximum, that that's an illegal sentence and can always be.
Why is there a need then for 2915 or 24035 to provide relief even post final judgment?
Well, I think 24035 covers a lot of other things.
It specifically covers this, though.
Right, it certainly does. But I think sometimes you can have rules that overlap.
The question we're asking is more basic. Does it make sense to say an illegal judgment is never a final judgment? Or isn't it just final, but it's wrong?
Well, I mean,
why would it be void, which is in effect what you're saying, if it's not final?
I think it traces back all the way to common law, although there it was limited
by term.
It actually
traces back to a decision where we just, I mean, just sort of common sense, we said, if it's illegal, it's not final.
I think, when I trace it back, it was to Osana, and Osana didn't cite any case law for it. But if you look at the CGAS and the ALRs, they actually also state this as this is the law. I mean, in the common law, in fact, used to be. Now, that was limited to the same term. But any time within the same term the court could always go back and change an illegal sentence. And the federal rule, until recently, Rule 35, I believe it is, I don't practice in federal law, so I'm not positive, it even actually, part of the rule said that you could challenge an illegal sentence.
But, you know, we held in Brown and Jane and a number of other cases that we set up 24035 and 2915 to allow you to raise a legal sentence, and habeas has always permitted you to raise an illegal sentence, and that 2907, it didn't address 2912, doesn't offer a duplicative basis for relief. Everybody doesn't get to file a 2907 and then file their 24035 and then file their habeas. Well, you pick one post-conviction, and if you can file under 24035, you cannot bring something you can bring under it under 2907 or 24035. You're asking us to overrule those cases because they explicitly address this and say they don't duplicate each other. There's only one post-conviction motion, but it does apply where you can't bring a 24035.
Well, I'm actually not asking to overrule those cases because my client at this point in time cannot file a 24035.
Right. And so, and Brown also says you can file a 2907 where you can't file a 24035 and gives us an example, a case where you haven't yet been remitted to the Department of Corrections. Right.
So, I mean, I think he can file a 2907, but I also think a 2912.
So why didn't you?
I wasn't the attorney. I mean, I think if you look at the, first of all, he's not challenging whether or not he is guilty of stealing, right? Normally when you try to vacate your guilty plea, a lot of times you are challenging that aspect. He's not challenging that he is guilty of stealing. He's only challenging the sentence. And when you look at the remedy under his...
Well, actually what he's saying is that his plea was involuntary because he didn't know it was a misdemeanor.
Well,
that's his actual allegation.
Well, my understanding is he's just challenging the sentence, that he pled guilty to stealing, and the most he could get is a year out of that for a misdemeanor stealing. And that
plain error applies forever.
Well, only on a legal sentence. Only on a legal sentence. And also only if you're not delivered to the Department of Corrections. Because once you're delivered to the Department of Corrections, you do have that timeline, right? So if he goes to prison and his timeline starts on 24035, he can't later go back on a 2912 motion. So this is a narrow application of 2912.
Has there been any case where you just bring a 2912 action? I mean, 2907 is under the criminal case, and 24035 isn't recognized as an independent action in our rules. But plain error, manifest injustice are concepts that normally apply in existing cases as opposed to a basis for a separate and independent filing, aren't they?
The closest case that I found was the Tinoco, and there it was prior to sentencing. And they did a granted 2912 release based on ineffective assistance of counsel. So, but it, in essence, in order to use 2912, I admit that you would have to go along with the cases, including this case, this court's decision in Morris, to say that an illegal sentence is not a final judgment. Because if it is a final judgment, then...
Let me ask it this way. Okay. If the court had jurisdiction to enter a sentence that was just wrong, do you then agree that 2912 wouldn't apply? If it isn't a jurisdictional issue, if after Webb versus Wasilka it's error, it's statutory error, but it isn't jurisdictional, then do you agree that 2912 would not apply?
Well, right. The case law is, I think,
because
clear.
Because all the cases you rely on that type of legal error, basically meaning that the court does not have jurisdiction.
But I still think the court was entitled to grant the relief that it did. In any event, under 9106. Now, the court didn't specifically cite to 9106, but 9106 specifically says that if the court, in this case, we're fortunate that the sentencing court and the habeas court are one and the same. It's the same judge.
But he hasn't filed his post-conviction yet, but you're saying he can file a habeas because he's illegally held.
Right.
He's not being held, but he's under an illegal...
Well, he doesn't even have to file the habeas because under 9106 it says once the court has something in front of them and the court looks and sees that...
But he can bring this under 2907D is your position. Is that right? Because it's explicitly set up for this very situation.
Oh, he could bring it under 2907.
So why would we go to habeas?
Well, I'm just saying that the court could have treated it as a habeas. That once he filed the 2912, once the action is in front of the court and the court sees that the person is illegally restrained, even if he hasn't filed a petition for writ of habeas corpus, 9106 says you can grant relief. And the relief for this court did in Bazell and Smith, is to do exactly what the judge did here, find a manifest injustice and resentence him.
Why is it not just to allow him to withdraw the guilty plea?
Well, again, he could withdraw the guilty plea, I guess, but he's not denying that he's guilty of stealing. I mean, I think that's why they did the 2912. It's not a matter of I'm not guilty of stealing. It's I'm guilty of stealing, but all I'm guilty of is a misdemeanor with a year county jail. And I think that's why they did the 2912. I don't think there was anything surreptitious.
Could the state proceed against him on the felony of receiving stolen property?
No. I mean, the state has admitted the statute of limitations has run. They cannot file an amended information charge.
So there can't be any felony that they can go at proceed against.
Not that I'm aware of, because Rule 2308 specifically says you can't amend a charge to a different offense. And so if court grants a 2907D, then all they could get out of this is a misdemeanor stealing anyway.
So opposing counsel said if they amend, they can do it. If they dismiss and refile, they can't. But you disagree. You think they also can't amend.
Right. They cannot amend. 2308 specifically says you can't amend a different offense.
You admit that if you file relief under 2907D, I mean, the defendant would be subject to incarceration on the misdemeanor. It wouldn't necessarily mean that probation continues.
Right, but the judge has already given the sentence. I mean, could you get, for the second case that's coming up, Walker has already served a year, and so there would be no incarceration. Mm-hmm. I mean,
In this case, the defendant's not served any time.
He hasn't. He's served 180 days, but that's a sentence the judge gave. Mm-hmm. The judge could have given a year, but the judge looked at the circumstances and decided that 180 days was, so I don't see where granting a writ. To grant a writ, you have to show that it's necessity. And if you look at it, the defendant was entitled, let's say that the court overrules its prior cases under 29, and say the 2912 couldn't be brought because these are, in fact, final. Even if you overrule this, under 2308, the most that could happen is exactly what happened. Under 9106, the judge could grant habeas relief. We could go back down and file a habeas right now, and the judge could immediately grant relief because that same judge is the habeas courts and grant the exact same thing. And
what if Basil's not retroactive, though? What's the result of that if this court were to rule that?
On retroactivity? Mm-hmm. I don't think retroactivity is an issue because right now...
Fair enough, but what if it is and you go back to the sentencing court and there's a 2907D motion filed and this court rules that Basil's not retroactive?
Well, if he sets aside his guilty plea, I think you start from new and you say this statute he's charged with is a misdemeanor. So I don't see why there's a necessity to grant the writ because if the defendant gets sent to prison for one day, we can turn back around and bring him a writ and have him released right away because he served an excessive sentence under 24035. And it seems to me that the best thing to do is to just deny the writ. I understand the arguments and the concerns they have under the 2912 and the court's concerned about how far back can you do about the final judgment. But they had their burden to show that it's necessary to grant a writ.
On a misdemeanor, does he have the potential of serving the difference between 365 days and 180 days?
Well, in theory, he could have, but the judge actually elected the sentence. The judge could have given, like in this case, Nelson, a year.
But
and the judge specifically said...
But
he
did
you
it under 2912.
Well, but whatever rule, I mean, it's clear that's what the judge had determined that the case was worth because the judge
in theory, you could have to serve that time, but you don't think in practice that would
as a practical matter, because the judge had the full range of punishment in front of him at the time and elected that amount of time. And in Walker, he's already served the year.
And did the state argue for more time?
I'm not sure. There's not a record of the sentencing on that, so I don't
know. So we don't know whether the state had an opportunity to argue or whether they did argue for...
I assume they had the opportunity to argue because they were there when they withdrew it and sentenced. I assume that they had the opportunity to argue. I don't know what, in fact, was argued, though.
If the court holds that 2912 is not available because it's not a separate cause of action or a separate path of relief, and the court suggests in this case or other cases that habeas isn't available, 2907 is the only route that's left, am I right?
That and 24035 if you get sent to the Department of Corrections.
Well, and what I'm trying to do is avoid a trap where the only way to get relief for those who are entitled to relief is to get revoked and go to corrections.
Right.
So I think 2907 is that prevents that.
Unless this court, in this circumstance where the habeas court and the sentencing court would be the same, the court could say that the sentencing court was entitled to convert it to a habeas.
But we're just asking, you do believe 2907 does provide an avenue for relief until such time as the person is remanded to the Department of Corrections?
It does provide an avenue for relief. Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you.
At the base of my opponent's argument is the Sosano line of cases that says it's axiomatic that a sentence that's contrary to law is not final. That can't be the law. And to the extent it is, it must be overturned. A statement like that just eviscerates swaths of appellate law where you're limited in your review. To say that a sentencing court can, without boundaries, I think Chief Justice Fischer said there's no boundaries under this Morris and Asana line of cases.
What about opposing counsel's point that while it didn't cite anything in Asana, there was a similar common law concept that an illegal sentence could always be corrected?
I'm not familiar with similar common law concepts on this nature, but if the court sticks with the Osana line of cases that a sentence that's contrary to law is not final, when can you appeal? I mean, the time for appeal is keyed off of when it becomes final. There's so many other rights that are keyed off of when a judgment becomes final. If it never becomes final, there's never a right to an appeal.
Well, but it's retroactive. You don't know what the final for that long after the appeal, or you wouldn't be relying on these cases.
Well, let's say someone the same day.
No, as I understand. I'm just saying, but it would be final and treated as final unless and until it's sort of retroactively not final and not appealable.
It's final until some defendant says, my judgment isn't final.
But, we really haven't run into that as a problem in the past. It's the first time this dichotomy has been brought up to this court, so it has not caused havoc.
Well, what about
that's, that's a very good thing. But I think with the Public Defender's Office sees this avenue to challenge all the.
What about Mr. Pasley, whose case was reversed in Basel? Can he come back now and file a 2912 under Mr. Johnson's theory?
I certainly think so. I think he should be the first one if he hasn't already. Everyone that's been convicted of felony stealing since 2002 or 2003 when the law changed. If you're in Department of Corrections now, if you're on probation, they certainly should be asking for relief. People that have had their convictions, they're done, they're off parole, they're off probation. Just imagine someone with one felony stealing case on the record. They can't get a job because they have felony stealing. If they've been convicted, let's say they had an SES, they can't possess guns because they have a felony on the record. There are just enormous quantities of people in Missouri that must be out there that are either thinking about it or should be thinking about seeking relief under the Basel decision. And if this court sticks with my opponent's theory, they can come back to the sentencing court and ask for relief. And that is the chaos of review that's unlimited in time, scope, and expense, that we're on the verge of that chaos. That if a sentence that is contrary to law is never final, then everyone can challenge it. On the issue of 2907D.
Your time has expired.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll hear from you on the next case, maybe.